It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. And basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93, that's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery, we are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Bus people.
Bus people are happy.
My audio is cutting out for some reason. I don't know why.
You really? We're getting some beautiful weather here. Bus people are happy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All About Wine. Thanks for joining us tonight. We don't have a guest. We thought we were going to have a guest. We thought we were going to have a guest from Australia. And, I think maybe he might have gotten tied up or something, couldn't join us tonight. And so since we found out just recently, as recently as actually this afternoon, we were hoping that he'd contact us. We don't have a guest. So we are going to talk about everything, anything, whatever you want. If you want to join us, you can call us 646-727-3235. That's the guest calling number. Mike will take your call and he will talk to you for a minute. We'll get you on the air. Anything you want to talk about wine, you can do that. That is, of course, if you are listening live, which is Thursday evening, October the 10th. Is today the 10th?
It's the 11th.
October 11th. Oh, wow. October the 11th in 2012. So if you are listening live, call in. If you're not, don't call in because you're not going to get us. We're not listening. We're not here.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was just reading a thing about signs and, you know, useless signs with things. And I saw one little thing that it was on a pizza box and it said, take pizza out of box before consuming. You know, I mean, I just, that's what, you know, so you can't be too careful now.
Kind of like on a wine bottle, you could put, you know, remove cork before serving, you know, something. I mean,
exactly.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
But this side up, you know.
This side up, yeah. If you're out there listening live, call us. If you have anything to talk about, we will be happy to talk about anything. I got a whole bunch of odds and ends to toss out here to you tonight, a whole bunch of bits of information. Any comments, Mike, before we get jumping into this?
No, I think everything's good. Everything's,
all right.
So far, it's working, so we're good.
All right. So, again, if you need to get a hold of us, give us a call. Mike and I were just looking at our numbers for the year. Wow, a lot of you are listening. Appreciate it a lot. Thanks a lot for being out there. Thanks a lot for tuning into the program. Thanks a lot for, I can't say supporting us because we don't have any way to support us. thanks for being out there and listening. We do appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, do so. we'll give you the contact information toward the end of the program. But get in touch with us. Let us know you're out there. Let us know everything. If you have any subject or anything you'd like us to cover, let us know. We will be more than happy to do it. Some of our suggestions that we've gotten from people have turned out to be some great guests and stuff. We've gotten emails from a girl in Pennsylvania who talked about somebody that she worked with who was a wine judge, and that was really an interesting program. Another guy in New York told us about a writer of a novel about the Finger Lakes. Turned out to be a great interview. So, you know, if you know anybody or if you yourself would like to be on the program, give us a note. Email us or go on Facebook and drop us a note there, or call us even and let us know. You can get us hold of me at the winery or anywhere, and we'd love to hear what you have to say and love to get you on the program. And you don't have to talk a lot. You don't have to talk about anything for a long period of time. Just be on the program. You'd be surprised. We have people all the time that say, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be any good for a guest. I don't know if I can talk that long. I don't know, you know, how long do I have to talk? And I say, well, as long as you want, as short as you want. Well, they'll say, I can only talk for about 10 minutes, and these are some of the guests that have been on for an hour and 10 minutes. So don't worry about it. If you're out there, you want to listen, you want to talk, call us or get in touch with us. We'll make arrangements and get you on the program. So baseball season's over. So if your team didn't win, sorry. If you got a team in the playoffs, go team. Football season's here, so go teams for that. We, living in the Tampa area here, have our dearly loved Bucks that we cheer for. But, you know, hockey season looks like it's going to be canceled, so or start real late anyway because of labor disputes. So enough of the sports. All about wine. I'm going to jump off wine here for a little bit to start the program, though. I just saw something here that I want to pass on to you. I don't believe I've done this yet. I've had this set in here for 2 or 3 weeks here, and I've been going to tell you about this, but haven't had an opportunity because we've had some guests and stuff and not been on the program, different things. But this is the American Craft Beer Drinker, Behaviors of the Microbrew Drinker. Just an interesting little thing. I know we're all about wine, but this, you know, craft beer and little small boutique wineries, we all feel this little niche in the country was needed and that people enjoy. So I want to tell you about this. Where are the beer drinkers buying their craft beer, their brew? 53% in grocery stores. Sit-down restaurants, 45%. Nightclubs or bars, 38%. Liquor stores, 37%. So, grocery stores. That almost surprised me when I saw that stat. Craft beer drinkers are more than twice as likely as all beer-drinking adults, 21 and older, to have purchased beer at a stadium or arena. So, I brought that. See my segue there? I brought that in about sports. Craft beer drinkers are more likely to do it then. Who is the craft beer drinker? 25% are between 30 and 39 years old. They are 49% more likely than the national average drinker to be men. They are 49% more likely than the national average to be employed full-time. They are 54% more likely than the average U.S. adult, 21 and older, to have a white-collar job. They are 78% more likely than the national average to have an annual household income of $250,000 or more. And 50% have a college degree or higher. So it seems like craft beer drinkers are a little bit of a high end. This is the market that we as wineries like to catch, this market here. And it's the craft beer drinker in the wine market, I think, really runs about the same. It's they're pretty close as far as the type of people that patronize both. So it's an interesting stack up there between the two. How the craft beer drinker surfs the web. I don't know how they get these stats. I can read you the source down here at the bottom at the end and let you know. But it says 29% of online microbrew drinkers spend 20 or more hours per week surfing the web. They are 50% more likely than 21-plus internet users to have visited YouTube in the past 30 days and twice as likely to visit Pandora. Have you ever been to Pandora, Mike?
No.
No, I haven't either.
Mm-mm.
What is Pandora?
I know. I think it's the, isn't that the music, oh, hold on a second.
I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it was like a radio type of thing. Yeah, it's like internet radio.
Oh, okay. No.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that. They're twice as likely to visit Pandora. Microbrew drinkers with wireless access are twice as likely as 21-plus wireless users to check sports scores and watch video clips on their cell phones. And they are three times as likely to check their stocks or the stock market on their wireless phones. And the top five consumption markets for microbrews in this country, for American adults 21-plus, Denver, Colorado, 13%. Portland, Oregon, 13%. Seattle, Washington, 11%. Colorado Springs, Colorado, 9%. And Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 9%. So just a little bit of stats there. I like I said, I found that interesting because I think this is the type of market that that wineries like to have. Pretty much they describe the winery market here. So that's it. The source, I really should read the source just so we can be, you know, like professionals here. Scarborough USA Plus released on 2/2011. Scarborough measures 210,000 adults, 18 and older, annually across a wide variety of media, lifestyle, shopping, and demographic categories. Data was collected over the course of the year from August 2010 to September 2011. Persons contacted were asked, have you had a microbrew in the past 30 days? They answered yes. They continued to question. So there's your source of the survey. Interesting. So, moving on. I want to talk about, there's confusion out there for certain words that are used in wine business, the wine industry and stuff like that. And there's a couple of real good websites out there that talk about things they call wine words demystified and telling you just a quick easy definition. Enofiles wine blog is really one of the best, I think. Enofylz, Enofiles wine blog. It's located under www.enofileswineblog.com. A nice site, guys. Does an excellent job on it. I think I've mentioned it before in past programs. But he does what he calls a wine words demystified topic once a week or a couple times a week or something. And I just want to go through a few of these words that he's had on there just to help you understand some of them. In the business, in the wine business, a lot of people know these words. If you're associated with the wine business a lot, you probably pick up on these and know these. If you're not, just more puff, more things to understand and more things to learn about the business, which is just interesting. Let's start with the first one here, free run juice. Free run juice. According to the Wine Bible, this is Karen McNeil's Wine Bible, and you can pick this up or order it online or something, is the free run, the juice that runs freely simply as a result of the weight of the grapes before any mechanical pressure is applied in a press. To describe this even better, you throw a whole bunch of grapes into a tank. The ones at the top are heavy. They're pressing on the ones underneath it, and you are getting juice. That juice is the free-run juice. It's as simple as that. The free-run juice is sometimes referred to as noble juice by the French. They have their own word, Vindigo, I believe it's pronounced, G-O-U-T-T-E. Oh, there we're going to get somebody writing this, Mike. I said that. I pronounced it wrong.
Vindigout. It's the French refer to as that. It's considered the most delicate, highest quality juice because it has higher levels of phenols that the juice produce when pressure is applied to the fermented grapes. Phenols are found in the skins and seeds of grapes. So, and also what gives the red wines the color and the tannins, too, the phenols and the free-run juice. The process, quickly, the process of separating the solids, which is the skin, the pulps, the seeds, all that from the fermented juice, is a couple of different ways. Some winemakers make special wine from just the free-run juice. Some wine will be fruity and sweeter than wines that use a combination of free-run and pressed juice because it's such pure juice. Pressed juice is usually darker and more tannic, but it gives the finished wine more structure and complexity. A lot of free-run juice, there is a difference, definitely a difference in the type of wines that you're going to get if you don't press it. So deciding whether to use or not to use free-run juice or combination of free-run or pressed juice is all up to the winemaker. He can do whatever he wants. The winemaker has to be cautious because the solids, if solids are pressed too much, the resulting juice can take on a bitter, a harsh note, a little bit of sharpness to it that you don't always want. So, free-run juice, that's what that is. Fermentation, I guess most everyone knows what fermentation is. That's what you're doing to get your to ferment the grapes. Let's give you a quick the official definition. The process during grape fermentation whereby yeast convert the natural sugars in the grapes to alcohol and carbon dioxide. That's why you home winemakers put your balloon over your carboy. The alcohol will remain a consistent of the wine that results, but in most cases, the carbon dioxide will be allowed to escape as a byproduct. That's fermentation. It makes your wine. You ferment your wine, that makes your wine. Next one here. Batonnage. French for lees stirring, from baton, which is French for stick, and that's just you stir the lees. There's lots of ways since you can do a lot of stuff. Part of the thing you can do is stir it up. I mean, you know, there's lots of different ways to do it. Punch it down. I was going to describe like a spice rack to a chef is what batonnage is used as, the same type of thing. It helps stir in the stuff and helps keep the wine in contact with all the stuff. So I believe I pronounced that right. I apologize if I don't. Which a lot of times I don't. So, let me check on something here. Okay, very good. Next word, and here I go again. I'm going to pronounce this one wrong too. This is, I believe it's pronounced cepage, C-E-P-A-G-E, cepage. This means grape variety. Cepage means grape variety. The so-called cepage nobles are those that constantly make fine wine, like Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Rieslings, the Merlots. These are cepage nobles. The white noble grapes are Sauvignon Blanc, Riesling, Chardonnay, and the red noble grapes are Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Merlot. So those, I think in a program in the past, I talked about the noble grapes.
Yeah, I know we covered Chardonnay and a couple of, like, Riesling and those, but different programs.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Yeah, Sauvignon Blanc. So we talked about these different grapes, these noble grapes. These are the, you know, considered the noble grapes in the world. There's six of them. A few places put eight on the list. I don't know what the other ones are. I think maybe Cabernet Franc, because it's grown in the Beaujolais region of France and stuff like that. But those are the noble grapes. That's what Sapaz means. It's just a wine variety. Here's a question for everyone out there. What is the most widely planted grape in the world? More than any other grape. My engineer here just guessed Cabernet Sauvignon. No, that's not right.
Chardonnay?
No, that you would think Chardonnay. No, the most widely planted grape in the world is the Thompson seedless grape.
Oh.
It's the table grape.
Oh. Okay.
That's not fair.
I would never guess that one. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't guess that either. I just... yeah, there you go. There you go. But yeah, it's the most widely planted grape in the world is the Thompson seedless grape, and it's also used a lot for raisins. So, you know, not only is it a table grape, but it's also used a lot for raisin as a raisin grape. So, you know, it's when you start looking at it like that. you can understand that. So, but yeah, the most planted grape in the world. Going on, another wine word demystified here is cap. Cap, C-A-P. I pronounced that one right. The crusty layer up to 2 feet or more deep of grape skins, pulp, stems, and seeds that rises and flows to the top of the juice during a red wine's fermentation. That's the cap. The cap must be kept in contact with the juice by one of several methods, which one of them is punching down the cap. You all may have heard of that, where you actually punch it back down into it. Only if the cap is thoroughly in contact with the alcohol in the fermentating juice can color, aromas, flavor, and tannins be extracted. So the cap flows to the top. People say, well, how do you separate it? Well, that's how it actually separates. But you don't want it separated. You want it to be in contact as much as you can. Cap is created when all the stuff, the grape skins, pulp, etc., are forced to the top by the carbon dioxide. I just told you about that in the fermentation. The carbon dioxide forces it to the top. And then during wine making, you punch it back down. You punch the cap back down into the juice, or you pump it over, which is another method that's used quite often. You pump the juice out of the bottom of the tank and squirt it back in on the top, or spray it back in on the top, or pump it back in that way. A lot of prefer punching it down simply because you're not adding a bunch of air to it and all that, as opposed to pumping over. So it's just a matter of what method most wine you use, but third method too. I do have to mention this. If anybody's out there listening who is making wine, third method actually is called the pneumatage process, in which compressed air or gas is injected into the juice, and this bubbles through it and all that. A nitrogen is used quite often for this method. Nitrogen is not throwing air onto it. It doesn't harm the wine. And you pump nitrogen through it, and it separates and punches it back down and throws the wine back over the top of the cap. So, three methods. Most common, though, probably is punching it down with pumping over being the second, and then throwing gas in or putting gas over the top of it is more than likely the third and least common. But that's what cap is, what it's called when you have all that stuff come to the top. And I just lost my place here. Let me find myself again. All right. And here we go. Let's see. I'm sorry, I didn't hear. My engineer said something to me. You said something? Oh, okay, no. I thought she was pointing out something to me here. All right. Next word is, and here I'm going to pronounce this wrong, pronounce Cremant, Cremant, C-R-E-M-A-N-T, Cremant. This is, Cremant is reserved for French sparkling wines made outside the Champagne region using the traditional method Champenois. It was once used to describe a champagne with about half the usual effervescence, often called a creaming wine. Okay, Cremant is French for creamy. You know, it's used these days for the French sparkling wines made outside the Champagne region. You know, by the French law, you can't call a champagne. They can't call it a champagne and can't be referred to by it unless it's made in that region. So, for example, you have Cremant de Limoges, the Cremant de Bourgogne, which are sparkling wines made in the Limoges region and the Burgundy regions of France, as opposed to the Champagne region. So currently there are 7 appellations in France that are allowed to use the designation Cremant in their name. Those 7 regions are, or 7 appellations are Cremant Alsace, Cremant Bordeaux, Cremant Bourgogne, Cremant Die, Cremant Jura, Cremant Limoges, and Cremant Loire. And there's one outside of France called Cremant de Luxembourg. So those are the 7 regions that can use Cremant. So it is an appellation, a sparkling wine name, an appellation name that cannot be used anywhere else. So if you see it on a bottle, it is a sparkling wine. It's not anything else. It's sparkling wine, but not from the Champagne, basically, but not from the Champagne region. They are all made from high-quality hand-picked grapes like Champagne. They use the same traditional method used in the Champagne, but they are much cheaper to buy. So there's you another good hint there. When you're going out and trying to find a nice sparkling wine or nice Champagne for an occasion or a holiday, anything, then check out the ones that say Cremant, C-R-E with the little mark above the C-R-E-M-A-N-T, pronounced Cremant. It refers to sparkling wine with less pressure and softer effervescence, or less carbon dioxide, which means it's fewer bubbles. So if you're looking for the bubbles, it's not going to be there, but it's going to be a little bit softer. The traditional champagne and other sparkling wines are bottled at 5 to 6 atmospheres, whereas the wines in the Cremant is bottled at 2 to 3 atmospheres. And let's talk and what atmosphere. The standard atmosphere, or ATM, is the international reference pressure, defined as 101.325 kPa, and formerly used as a unit of pressure. So it's a pressure, and it's a bar pressure. For practical purposes, we're replaced by bar, which is 100 kPa. The difference is about 1%, is not significant. So it refers to the pressure, or the amount of bubbles that you're going to get into it. So I can go into all this stuff here, but it's over my head, and I'm not going to sit there and try to interpret it, and I'll probably mispronounce most of the stuff anyway and have to look further, and so I'm not going to do any of that. So, but that's Cremant. That's interesting. So if you look, don't look for champagne, look for Cremant. You might find something there that's cheaper and just as good. Next one, bouquet. And this is something I teach in my wine class all the time. Bouquet, it's not the same as aroma. It is not the same as aroma. Bouquet and aroma are two different things. The aroma is what the grape is going to give to the wine. And the bouquet, technically, is what the winemaker gives to the wine. The definition from the Wine Bible, technically, bouquet refers specifically to the aspects of a wine's scent or nose derived from the winemaking process and bottle aging. So it is not the same as aroma. It is different. It's what most of the time, oak. I mean, let's face it. If you're going to get anything done by the winemaker, most of the time it's going to be oak aging, and this is what you're going to get your different aromas and taste and all that. That's about it. There is a difference. You can tell the difference. You don't have to be a professional taster to understand the difference and all. Just simply the aroma is what the grape gives to it. You have the aroma wheel and all that stuff out there. And then the bouquet is what the winemaker gives it. The primary aromas are from the grape and usually get floral, fruity, and stuff like that. Secondary aromas come out in by second fermentation and stuff like that, which you don't pick up a whole lot. But the bouquet, you're going to get things, like I say, most of the time it's oak, oak and bottle aging. And that's going to be things like a fig, vanilla. Vanilla is very big, too. That's probably the best bouquet to describe it. If you do oak aging, especially in white wines, oak aging is usually vanilla. If you pick up vanilla in the nose or in the taste of white wine or even a red, it's usually not so strong in a red. But vanilla in a white wine or any wine, that is oak aging. That's the bouquet. That's what the winemaker is giving it. But you have vanilla, cloves, yeast, walnut, hazelnut, leather, licorice. These are things that the winemaker is giving to it by oak aging and by having in contact with any type of oak and stuff like that. So that's actually a different definition of bouquet. Brix, I think we've covered this before. Good chance to talk about it quickly again here. Brix, it's a measure of the sugar content of grapes before they are harvested, used to estimate the alcohol content of the resulting wine. The Brix is not really an exact measure. It gives you, it's pretty close though. Each degree of Brix equals approximately 1 gram of sugar per 1,000 grams or 100 grams of juice. So 1%, 1 degree, or 1 gram of sugar per 100 grams of juice is 1 degree of Brix. So if you're picking wine, or picking grapes rather, at 25 Brix, then that's 25% sugar, basically, is what you're talking there. You can use a refractometer, which is a very simple little machine or gadget, an instrument that you can measure the Brix in. It's very simple. You just drop juice into the little glass piece. You close the lid. You look at it through the other end of the eyepiece, and you can read the degrees Brix by the little scale that's on it. It's a simple, easy way to measure Brix. A lot of wine people, vineyardists and stuff, when they measure or when they go to harvest, don't use a refractometer or anything. They just throw the grape in their mouth and say, oh, this is ready to pick. You can taste it. I've can taste the degrees of sugar. You can taste the degrees of sugar in a grape. Pick up a grape at the grocery store, and you can see how sweet they are. If they're not that sweet, or you always know, oh, these are sweet or these aren't sweet, that's really what you're looking for when you pick wine grapes. You're looking for the highest level of sweetness that you can find it. So the higher level of Brix, the higher sugar, and the better it is when you take it in to be produced and ferment, because the higher the Brix, the more you have to play with on alcohol. If you have a real high Brix, you can get a higher alcohol wine if you want it and still have a hint of sweetness in there and all that. That's it. The larger wineries, a little bit more complex. They measure by digital density meter or an infrared spectroscopy measuring energy absorption by molecular bonds. And it's all Brix. I mean, it's all just, even more precise, but that's Brix. Dosage. This is something that you might be interested in. Dosage. The degree, dosage, the actual definition of the Wine Bible, the degree of sweetness of the liqueur d'expedition, which is used to top up champagne before its final corking. The dosage is what determines whether champagne will be brut, extra dry, demi-sec, and so on. So that's the definition. Dosage is the practice of adding liqueur d'expedition to replace the small amount of liquid lost during the disgorgement process when making sparkling wine using the traditional method. It's usually a mixture of wine and sugar. And so what you're doing is you're adding a little bit of this. And the amount that you're adding will tell the difference between your brut or an extra dry or a demi-sec or dry or whatever it is on the champagnes. That's dosage. Okay. Aromas. Let me read you quickly the aroma, definition of aroma. I just said that a term broadly used to describe a wine smell. This is, again, from the Wine Bible. Technically, however, the smell of any wine is divided into the aroma, the smell that derives from the grapes, and the bouquet, a more complex smell that a wine acquires after aging or from oak. So that's aroma. In fact, I just mentioned that to you. But that's Wine Bible definition of that there. I keep bouncing back too far on that. I don't know why. So the next word is, and again, I lost it here. Let me get back to it. Muselet. M-U-S-E-L-E-T. Muselet. Everybody's seen one. Everybody's probably played with one. Everybody probably has cursed one. But not Muselet. The T is silent. It's French. Muselet, I believe it is. Yeah, the Muselet. Muselet. The Muselet is the wire cage holding a champagne cork onto the bottle. It's that little wire thingy on a champagne bottle. Muselet. According to Champagne and Security, it always takes 6 turns if you do it by hand to unwire it, or 3 if you count the full 360-degree turns to fully loosen the muselet. I've never noticed that. I've never counted. But next time you open a bottle of champagne that has a muselet on the top or the wire thing on the top, 6 turns, and we only turn it 180 at a time because that's what our wrist does. So it takes 6 turns, but if you turn it all the way around each time, it only takes 3. That's it. A person who collects champagne capsules, the thin piece of metal between the top of the cork and the muselet, is called a plasmusophile. or my engineer just said, or an idiot.
This will generate some email.
Especially from the Plasmusa files out there. You know, the opinion of my engineer does not
necessarily reflect. What do you think? I need to add that to the ending.
So that's PLACOMUSOPHILIE. Plasmusophile. That's the little thin piece of metal between the top of the cork and the mucilage on a champagne bottle. I don't know. I've never paid any attention to it. Does it have the name on there? It must have the name or something on there. I mean, you know, I don't know. So interesting little thing there. And let me go to this last one here before I go into something else. There's a couple other things I'm going to talk about before the night's over. This is estate bottled. This is a little bit of a controversy going on right now, too, about this term, estate bottled. But the Wine Bible, Karen McNeil's Wine Bible, says exact definitions of estate bottled differ depending on the country. In the United States, the term may be used by a winery only if its wine is entitled to use a viticulture area or appellation of origin on its label, and only if the winery is located in the area, grew all the grapes used in that wine on land owned or controlled by the winery within that area, and completely produced the wine, aged it, and bottled it at the winery. Wow. Let me go through that one more time here. Exact definition differ, but in the United States, the term may be used by a winery only if the wine is entitled to use a viticulture area or appellation of origin on its label, and only if the winery is located in that area. Also grow all the grapes used in the wine on land owned and controlled by the winery within that area, and completely produce the wine, aged it, and bottled it at the winery. So pretty strict control there over estate bottled. In other words, used to make the wine are grapes used to make the wine are from the winery's property and is produced, bottled, and aged at the winery. Basically, that's what it's saying. The grapes, the source of the grapes, have to be from that area. So if you see a state bottle, that's really what they're saying is it's in and of itself makes for a better wine, because it's all contained right there at that winery. But there are a lot of factors, though, come into it. You know, how much, it didn't say here, and I'm not sure how much of those grapes have to be 100%. Did it say all the grapes? Grow all the grapes using the wine on that land. So, it has to be 100% from that land there. But so many wineries get grapes and source it out from other areas. You can say estate bottled, but it doesn't mean that it's a great estate. It doesn't mean that it's a great area that they're growing it. So, I don't know. It's a little bit confusing. But basically, if it says estate bottled, that's it. It's all from right there. One more wine word demystify, and that's fortified. People come in all the time, I'm talking about my port, and I say the port's fortified, and people go, what does that mean? Well, fortified, a wine such as a sherry or a port that has had its alcohol content increased by the addition of distilled grape spirits. Okay, like clear brandy. Now, brandy is a grape derivative for all of you out there. It's distilled as opposed to fermented. Most fortified wines contain between 16 and 20% alcohol by volume. Or if you would rather talk in hard stuff, that would be 36 to 40% or 32 to 40% proof, which is proof is exactly double of what the alcohol level is. That's all proof means, is double alcohol. So, fortified. The origin for fortifying wine was way back in the day when they used to preserve wine or preserve wines and stuff for long ship trips, voyages and stuff like that. And alcohol, the higher the alcohol, it's natural antiseptic, so it didn't go bad and it wasn't, it survived in long journeys. Even the additional alcohol no longer, when it didn't need to be used as a preservative, fortification continued to be used on ports and sherries and stuff. Fortified wines can run the gamut of flavors from very sweet to very, very dry, to dust in the mouth dry. Whether it's dry or sweet, it depends on the distilled spirits and when they're added and how much and all that stuff. If the distilled spirits added before the fermentation process and the alcohol in the distilled spirits kills the yeast and leaves the residual sugar behind, it's going to be sweeter. Usually port, the alcohol, the distilled spirits is added early in the process, and so you keep the sweetness on there. But if it's added, the grape spirits added during fermentation, and the yeast cells continue to convert to sugar, the alcohol level will climb up, but it become toxic to the yeast and kills the yeast, and the fermentation is allowed to result in the wine being lower in sugar and is considered dry, like sherry. So that's fortified wines, and that's how they get the sherry and the port. It depends on when the alcohol or the brandy is added, or the distilled spirits technically is added, and to keep the sweetness or dryness. All right. So enough wine words demystified. Always, we're to a segment here, which I'm going to run through, which is always a fun segment, is our real estate segment, talking about property for sale. Again, as always, if you are interested in these, email me and I'll send you contact information for brokers or whomever is selling these. There's a wine warehouse for sale in St. Helena. 6,000 square feet, including offices, refrigerated, insulated, bonded. It's available in January 2013. So if you need a wine warehouse in St. Helena, this is for you. Beckman Winery, Vineyard, and a Home. Country home on 7-plus idyllic acres, Beckman Estate Winery. 5 acres of Syrah, Zinfandel, and Cinsault. Winery building and garage, equipment, storage building, reduced to $429,000. Wow. That's a good price.
Okay.
$429,000, that's less than $500,000. That's considering these prices are over $1 million. Wow. Oh. 394-acre Central Coast Vineyard. 1,133-gross-acre Dunn Ranch, located in Gilroy, California. Contains 394 plus or minus acres of vineyards, Chardonnay, Gewurztraminer, Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, and 600 plus or minus acres of pasture land, of which additional acreage may be suitable for wine growing or wine grape planting. Estate home, 6,300 square feet, and guest house are also included. $23 million.
Wow. They take Visa?
Use the rebate.
Wow.
Cashback. Yeah.
Yeah. Mention the show and you get a discount or something? Or is
that we're that easy. Yeah.
Wow.
But
that's amazing.
394 acres, 1,133 gross acre ranch. Gilroy, California. Gilroy is the artichoke capital of the world. At least they say they are. So this, if you don't want to plant grapes on the other acreage, you can always plant artichokes because they grow very well down there in that area. So, yeah, just like, you know. Winery site for lease. 25,000 square foot production winery with unlimited use permit in Hillsborough will be available for lease commencing early 2013. Wow, we got a couple of them coming up in 2013. Red Mountain property available. 10.5 irrigated acres located on Red Mountain, Washington State's premier wine growing area. We haven't been to Washington State yet, so we haven't talked about it. You know, we don't know where that is to be able to tell you. Property has modest dwelling and equipment storage shed. No price. But if you're in Washington, something in Washington, that is available. And then the last one, the Vineyard Estate in Mycamus Foothills. St. Helena, approximately 9-acre Rutherford Bench Hillside Vineyard. High-quality Cabernet Sauvignon. Contract expires in 2012. Ooh, this year. Includes a 4,500-square-foot finished barn, a 1,200-square-foot storage cave, and a magnificent knoll-top home and guest house. The seller would consider leasing back the domestic improvements, asking
$8,995,000.
Mm-hmm. So, there you go. Anyone interested, contact us. I will give you contact information. You can go out and buy yourself wineries, and then, as always, you need to be on our program.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have any other? I know you were talking about what else was there? Real estate. Got the definition terms. Craft beer. Wow.
Hey, I got something else. But of course,
there you go.
Coming up October the 18th through the 20th. 18th through the 20th. Wine Spectator magazine. This is this month. Actually, what, in a week and a half? Next week. 18th.
Yeah, actually.
18th through 20th. J.W. Marriott Los Angeles LA Live. It's a walk around grand tasting featuring the winemakers and owners. Includes sit-down tasting and seminars and a fantastic Saturday night banquet. Jeez, I read that wrong. Banquet. The weekend program is designed for both the novice and the wine expert. 3 days of tasting seminars and a fantastic Saturday night banquet. Grand tasting. Excuse me. Grand tasting. Is the New World Wine Experience begins with the Grand Tasting. This is the first of two nights to taste wine from more than 200 prestigious New World wineries from California, Oregon, Washington, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Argentina, Chile, and beyond that have been selected for excellence by Wine Spectator's Board of Editors. Each winery has been asked to pour one grape vintage throughout the two nights of tasting, a wine rated 90 points or higher by Wine Spectator. This is a rare opportunity to meet the owners and winemakers who will be pouring their wines. These walk-around events are considered among the most educational and enjoyable features of any wine experience. A light buffet is included in your ticket price. And they have a whole list of wineries. I'm not going to go through them. There's a bunch. There's over 200 of them here. But Friday, they start out with the welcome at 9 a.m., Krug Champagne Tasting is 9:15 to 9:45. They have speakers coming in. Biodynamic Wine Tastings on Friday from 10 to 10:40. I would love to do that. I really would.
Mm-hmm.
An exploration of this controversial philosophy through four great wines from around the world presented by their producers. The wines are from Napa, through Patagonia in Chile, France, and the other one is also from France. So four biodynamic wine tastes. Boy, that would be fun. Then we got Australia. Talking about Australia, California, Rhone Reds from wineries there. There's a luncheon. Then Masson Louis Jodot talks and Wine Spectator's top 10 tastings. And then the Grand Tastings is from 6:30 to 10. That's on Friday night. And Saturday, 9 to 9:55. A video, a Wine Spectator produced video, and then they do blind tastings and food and wine tastings in the early late morning, and then a luncheon, and the Best of Italy tastings, and then that evening they have the annual banquet, which is champagne reception from 6:30 to 7:30, and 7:30 is a black tie banquet with highlighting. All wines rated 90 or above. And wow. I just love to be able to attend this thing. If you are interested, you can contact Wine Spectator Magazine. The complete package includes Thursday and Friday grand tastings, Friday and Saturday seminars, luncheons, conducted tastings, and Saturday grand award banquet. Only $1,875 per person. Well,
wow.
You know, considering what you're getting there, you almost have to say that's worth it. You got the hotel, but.
Okay.
Almost have to say that's worth it. The grand taste tickets only, Thursday from 7:30 to 10 is $250. Friday from 7:30 to 10 is $250 per person. Grand Buffet Award Banquet only, $400 per person.
Mm.
And for more details, or if anyone's interested, and again, this is coming up on the 18th to 20th, so this next week, next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, you may contact. And if you're listed to this on archives in a week and a half or 2 weeks, sorry you missed it. But you, for more detailed hotel information, to order tickets, visit WineExperience-NW.com. WineExperience-NW.com or go to WineSpectator.com. So there you go.
Wow. Okay. And that would, where does that bring us to? A couple of minutes here. At the top of the hour. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so October 18th through the 20th. And where was that located again?
Los Angeles.
I have the L.A. Okay, I didn't get that part. Right, good. J.W. Marriott. Okay.
J.W. Marriott. Well, 18,000. What did I say? 18? 1,875. $1,875.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So if you're in the Los Angeles area, definitely
each person
head out there.
Each. Since it's a dollar, you and I can attend.
Yes. If, yes. Yes.
Wait a minute. My engineer is sitting here saying, wait a minute.
Yes. Right. If each person out there listening in the archives, send a dollar. Okay.
We can start
that'll be interesting. If you'd like to comment on the show tonight and some of the pronunciations, we certainly welcome those. You can email the show allaboutwine101@gmail.com. It's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Or if you have $1,875 you'd like to donate towards our Let's Go to Los Angeles and do the walk around tasting event. definitely email as well. I think I'm busy on those days, but
I'm not.
And
I'm
plus,
not. I can find a way to be unbusy. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And vacation's right around the corner, so I don't think I can get more days off. But hopefully somebody will pull through, and you never know. So you'll even be a special guest on the show.
Yes.
The whole hour could be yours. That would be an idea. We'll just sell talk time, but it has to be about wine, you know, it has to be clean. But we'll just sell talk time, and it would be $1,875 for the hour. There you go.
Actually, if we're out there, you can have the show next week. And so we'll sell the show, $1,875 next week.
18th, we would do a show on the 18th, huh? That'd be interesting. But next week, speaking of, we're trying to go back to Liberty, Missouri.
Yes,
is that the right? Okay, I just want to make sure.
Bevor Winery in Liberty, Missouri. Cool place.
What's it called again?
Bevor.
B. You said B something or V?
V.
Victor.
I-R. Bevor.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. All right, so next week, that is a definite, and we will be, because today was kind of, I made the change to the listing almost at the last minute that we weren't going to do Australia, but originally we were going to cover Australia and have a guest, special guest from Australia, which down there it was 7 p.m. was 9 a.m. their time on Friday, so we know tomorrow already exists, and right now it'd be 10 a.m., over there in Australia, but didn't get a recall back on that. So I guess
maybe he's busy. We don't know.
Could be. And they're going through, are they in summer now? Because they're kind of getting into summer.
Yeah, it's spring for them. We're fall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bevor. I'm sorry, Bevor.
Bevor. Okay.
Bevor.
I think that's how I wrote it last time.
B-E-L-L-D-W-A-R. Belvoir.
So that'll be next Thursday on October the 18th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And I guess we can close the show and got some interesting stuff again tonight. So that was cool. So tune in again next week. And are we expecting a guest next week?
Hopefully we're going to have the winemaker from Belvoir.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure if it was we're just talking about it or if we actually have somebody there. So So stay tuned with us for more information and details on upcoming shows and things that are happening here on All About Wine through the Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR, as in Blog Talk Radio. It's all one word, no spaces or anything. facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. That's the best way. I know Ron's on there posting updates and, you know, who he's getting in touch with and what's going to be on the show, who's going to be on the show, the topics. So that's the best way to connect with us. And if you're on Facebook, log in and actually like the page. We'd really appreciate that. Because for every person who likes our page, we get I don't think we get anything, but
nothing.
We get the satisfaction of knowing somebody's actually.
That's it. That's exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. And that's worth a lot. Yeah.
Yes, we really appreciate that. So definitely like the page when you're on Facebook next time. And there's billions of you out there, so we know there's got to be a few of you listening. But do that, and we really appreciate it. And we will see you next Thursday with All About Wine at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And now,
thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, and we'll see you all next time. Here we go. You know what? You know what's going to play. Okay.
Yep.
Everybody, let's go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.